Om Janatam Nandasyarajana Janaslakaya Taksi Samaritan Janatasma Sugave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Janabhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapadatiyam Manjikopati Vishya Vipasandu Vaya Vajra Kutitanam Prabhinedo Vajra Yesterday we read how Prakrit Maharaj asked about this Vritrasura. How is it possible that rare, such sudholava prasanatma, rare devotional service that makes one so deep and peaceful, how is it manifest within this asura? Vritrasura. And Sukadeva Goswami began his reply, quoting authorities, by telling how a king of Surasena named Chittaketu was the emperor of the entire world. And although he had so many hundreds and thousands of wives, he did not have a son. And therefore his entire kingdom was no pleasure to him. So when the great sage, the Rishi Angira Muni, appeared before him, the king, possessing proper culture, welcomed him very appropriately, with great respect, with great affection. He seated him on his own throne. He worshipped the sage. And the sage, he fed the sage, he took care of him. And finally the sage began to inquire about the king's welfare, asking him how his kingdom was, how this was, how that was. Because he had noted, by looking at Marachitaketu's face, that something was not happy within his heart. So he asked him the cause of his unhappiness, and the king replied, that although you know everything, still, because you're asking, it's my duty to tell you. What is it? That I'm not happy because despite all my queens, none of them has been able to bear me a son. Please, he asked Angira Muni, you please help me. Because by the potency of a great sage, something that is practically speaking, impossible can be made possible. So it was the king's karma not to have a child regardless of how many wives he had. But yet, the sage was so powerful that he circumvented the karma. Circumvented the king's karma, performed the sacrifice. He changed his karma, practically speaking, and awarded the foremost queen of the king some sweet rice prasadam. They worshipped Twasta, one of the progenitors. And they awarded Kritaduti, the wife of Chittaketu, with some prasadam. And when she took that, she was able to become impregnated by her husband, the king. And then, in the last verse we read, Angira Muni approached Chittaketu Maharaj and said, now you will have your son, but he will be Harsha Soka. He will cause you happiness, but he will simultaneously cause you great lamentation. And then immediately Angira Muni left without explaining anything at all. The king thought that, okay, my son, being my only son, may become spoiled, maybe become disobedient, but yet he will be my son. I will have a prince to take over the kingdom after I'm gone, who will offer the proper sacrifices, the shraddha, the pinda, to ensure that myself and my forefathers will be saved from hell. And in this way, Chitraketu was so happy because he was going to have a son. We'll begin reading with text 30 in chapter 14 of Canto 6. As Kritika Devi, after receiving the semen of Lord Shiva from Agni, conceived a child named Skanda Kartikeya, Kritaduti, having received semen from Chitraketu, became pregnant after eating remnants of food from the jaga performed by Angira. After receiving semen from Mara Chitraketu, the king of Surasena, Queen Kritaduti gradually developed in her pregnancy. O King Prickett, Sukadeva Goswami says, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased. After purifying himself by bathing and by decorating himself with ornaments, he engaged learned brahmanas in offering benedictions to the child and performed the birth ceremony. Unto the brahmanas who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. He wanted everything in the ceremony to go well. Why? Because he wanted the blessings of the brahmins and everyone else to pour forth upon his son. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Chitraketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. He wanted everyone to bless his son. He wanted his son to have no detractors. Everyone should be a well-wisher of my son. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, what happens? A poor man gets money after struggling so hard, what happens? His affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received the son, his affection for the son increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Kritaduti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have sons. Envy is beginning to spring forth in their hearts. As King Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Kritaduti increased because she was the mother of the boy. But gradually, he lost affection for the other wives who had no sons. The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence toward them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives exactly like a maidservant. This is how they were lamenting. The wife who has the son, because the husband is neglectful, he's giving his affection to those wives who have sons, especially in this case, Kritaduti. Then the Kritaduti, they're thinking, is treating them like maidservants. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Even maidservants, they're thinking, who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservants, therefore, we are most unfortunate. lamenting and envy. Shri Sukadev Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritadutti's opulence and possessing a son, Kritadutti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. What's the difference between envy and jealousy? And in jealousy, you want them to increase in opulence?
No, but you also want to have what they
have. Yeah. So envy is actually much stronger. You want what they have, but it is increased, the jealousy increases so much, so intensely, that you wish them harm. It burns like fire, and if someone who is envious, they cannot be happy in any way. So as their envy increased, they lost their intelligence, being extremely hard-hearted, and it hardens the heart so much. And unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Kritadutti walked within the house, thinking that her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand that he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritadutti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maid servant, approached the child who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upward. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing a loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground, unconscious. O King Pricket, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also began to cry. The queens, who had administered the poison, also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire as he went to see the dead child. He kept slipping and falling on the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned Brahmins present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu, merged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers, and all the brahmanas. The garlands of flowers decorating the queen's head fell, and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the collyrium on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a karari bird. This is what her lamentations. "Alas, O Providence, O Creator, You are certainly inexperienced in creation. For during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful, as he reports after. My Lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruit of activity. However, if fruit of activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need of a controller or a God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent. Then she turned to the child. My dear son, I am helpless and very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son we will have to suffer the distress of going to the darkest hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore, I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. My dear son, you have slept a long time. Now please get up. Your playmates are calling you to play. Since you must be very hungry, please get up and suck my breast and dissipate our lamentations. My dear son, I'm certainly most unfortunate, for I can no longer see your mild smiling. You have closed your eyes forever. I therefore conclude that you have been taken from this planet to another from which you will not return. My dear son, I can no longer hear your pleasing voice. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, accompanied by his wife, who was thus lamenting for her dead son, King Chitraketu began crying loudly with an open mouth, being greatly aggrieved. As the king and queen lamented, all their male and female followers joined them in crying. Because of the sudden accident, all the citizens of the kingdom were almost unconscious. When the great sage Angira understood that the king was almost dead in an ocean of lamentation, he went there with Narada Rishi. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 14th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Chitraketu's Lamentation. So we'll continue in a few moments, but we'll read some of those purports in which Queen Kritaduti criticized the Creator. First she said, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. Prabhupada's purport. This is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked because some people are happy and some are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. Following the creative laws, a father should die first, the laws of creation, basically. Following the creative laws, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence should certainly not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruitive activity work. And without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's the example that Prabhupada would give or can be given that we are all in this world and we enjoy and suffer according to our karma? Some person gets an award by the state for his good deeds, a medal. Maybe he gets some financial remuneration. Maybe he gets a position due to his good deeds, and another person gets thrown into prison by the state due to his deeds. So is it the government? Is it the state's fault? Can we say the reason that the person gets the medal is because the state has awarded it to him? Not any more than we can say that the reason that a person is in prison is because the state put him there. No, it is due to the deeds of the person. So we have to take responsibility for what happens to us and understand tateyanu kampam susumikshamano bhunjane vapmakripavapakam ridvag vivabhudam vidatanam namaste jivati om mukti padesa dayavak. This is the way a devotee thinks. When something good happens to him, he thinks, this is my karma, and actually, I don't deserve this good karma. This is Krishna's mercy, actually. It's appearing as karma. And when something bad happens to him, he thinks, I deserve much worse. And Krishna, by his kind mercy, he has minimized it. Samoham sabhabhuteshu name dveshostina priya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya teteshu chapyaham. Krishna doesn't treat his devotees as he treats everyone else. For the everyone else, he's acting neutrally as the super soul. Samoham sabhabhuteshu, I'm equal to everyone. Name dveshostina priya. They're just getting the reactions of their fruitive activities. That Krishna is the upadrashtanomanta charvata bhukta mahishwara. He has set up this material nature to work in this way, to reciprocate with the activities of the living entity. But, and he, it is his energy that makes it work, but it is not him that is causing the reactions. It's material nature reciprocating with the living entity, the deeds of the living entity, with the mentalities of the living entity. So the criminal who is not going to become rectified blames the judge for his being in jail and his being lashed. But if one accepts what happens to one as the reaction to his own deeds, then if one takes that responsibility from oneself, then one will be extremely careful how he acts. Why? Because no one wants to suffer. It is not natural to want to suffer. We fear suffering. If we think we're going to get sick, we take medicine, we go to the hospital to stop the disease, the difficulties from increasing. We don't want pain. We don't want suffering. So what is the way to stop this pain and suffering? The way is to act properly. And ultimately, of course, the way is to get out of the material world. Because ultimately the material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It means suffering. Practically speaking, there's no way to avoid suffering in the material world. There have been previously many chapters that have described the very nature of karma, how it sits within the mind, within the subtle body, and it is carried adishtayam manaschayam vishaya upasevate. It's carried like the air carries fragrances or bad odors. Similarly, the subtle body carries our karma, the impressions that we have, the desires that we have, the reactions that we have, from one body to the next, to the next, to the next. So therefore, we should be very careful, obviously, about what we do. So without, as Prabhupada's, the last line of his purport says, it is not the Creator that causes these things, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruit of activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So next, Kritaduti says that maybe one might say the Creator may respond to her words of criticism, saying there's no law that says that the son has to outlive his father, or that even the son has to even be born in the lifetime of the father. There's no law like this, the Creator can say in response. And this is just fruit of activity. And then she counters that argument by saying, if this is the situation, that fruit of activity is so powerful that it causes birth and death, then there's no controller that's needed if everything works by fruit of activity. The controller should make the law work properly. If it's only fruit of activity, what's the need of having a controller? And then answering, responding to that, well, that can't be true because the material energy can't work without a power behind it. Just like the law may be there in the books, but it doesn't affect anyone unless the government's power is behind it in the form of the governor and the police. The law, no one would care for the law at all if it wasn't for them. So one can't blame everything on the law. That's her answer. And she says, if you continue the way that you're going, that fruit of activities, that there's no law, that only fruit of activities rule, that children can die any time, then what are parents going to do? Parents are going to become detached to protect themselves from the pain of attachment, and when they're detached, they won't bring up their children, and everyone will neglect their children. So therefore, she completes her argument, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent, causing so much trouble. Here's Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Karmani nirdahati kintu jabhakti bhajan. One who has taken to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of karma mamamsa philosophy, which says that one must act according to his karma, and that a supreme controller must give the results of karma. The subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says, the one who can understand him and how he is acting, controlling everything by subtle laws, immediately becomes free by his grace. That is the statement of the Brahma Samhita. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. So actually, how one should work in this world, and how the law of karma works, and how Krishna is above that, and how devotees can circumvent, go beyond karma by Krishna's grace, is very, very, very subtle and not understood very easily, and not understood at all by non-devotees. And therefore, Prabhupada concludes, One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. One should serve Him and surrender everything to His will. What does that mean? His desire. What does that mean? Sarvadamam prityaja mamekam sharanam braja hamtam sarva papebhyo mokshishami masucha. What one has done in previous lives or even in this life to make the good and bad happen to him or her, one simply does not know. He cannot fathom. One can consult an astrologer or a Bhrigu reader and get some idea. But actually, one cannot know exactly what one did. So who is there actually to become angry at when something bad happens? But yet there is a point beyond that that Prabhupada is explaining here, is that karma, the reactions to our sinful deeds, and even the reactions to the good deeds, they can be completely destroyed at the root by pure devotional service. But that devotional service must be pure. One has to give himself up. When one gives one's heart completely to Krishna and agrees to be directed by Him fully, with great, great, great loving devotion, then one is free of all karma in this world, even though Krishna may use that karma, still it is only Krishna who is working through it. And a surrendered soul therefore knows that nothing can happen to him without Krishna's desire. And there's something of Krishna behind everything. That Krishna is behind everything. And because he trusts fully Krishna, he surrendered to him with full faith and devotion and love, knowing that Krishna is the Suridam Sarvabhutanam Surit. He is the dearmost friend and well-wisher of every living entity. Such a person is living in Vaikuntha, Purna Vishva. Vishvapurna Sukhayate, even in this world which Krishna himself says is Dukalayam Ashashvatam Anitya Sukhaloka. It is a miserable place, it is temporary, everything that you, and Prahlad Maharaj later in the next canto will say that the nature of the material world is that what you don't want to happen happens and what you do want doesn't happen. But yet, for a devotee who is fixed deeply, deeply in devotion, Vishva Purna Sukhayate, this Vishva, this material world, Purna Sukhayate, is a place of full happiness. Because he is living in Krishna, in Krishna's mercy. But that realization is deep, has to be deep. It is not at all, can't superficially just say it. We can superficially say it, but life will shake us to the root to see how deep we understand this. Shake us to the very root. But yet it's fully true that one should take to devotional service without reservation and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this life and the next. Continuing with her lamentation, she turns to her son after criticizing the Creator, requesting him to go back, to leave Yamaraj's company, leave the company of the Lord of Death. She says, according to the Vedic injunctions, one must accept a wife. Excuse me, this is the Prabhupada's purport. According to the Vedic injunctions, one must accept a wife just to beget a son who can deliver one from the clutches of Yamaraj. Unless one has a son to offer oblations to the Pitas or forefathers, one must suffer in Yamaraja's kingdom. So this is not meant for devotees. King Chittaketu is very, very much aggrieved, thinking that because his son was going away with Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, he himself would again suffer. The subtle laws exist for the karmis. If one becomes a devotee, he has no more obligation to the laws of karma. During the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of his leading disciples wished to perform the Shraddha ceremony for his departed father. And according to the Acharyas who comment on the nectar of devotion, Bhakti Samatha Sindhu, this is not at all required. That's basically Prabhupada saying it here. The same ceremony, offering of pinda, of prasadam, Vishnu prasadam, should be offered in a particular ceremony, the Shraddha ceremony. Grains have to be offered to save the parents from suffering in hell for the reactions, for the deeds that they've done. So a Vaishnava doesn't have to perform this. But yet, because people may criticize him if he doesn't perform it, oh, you're not doing your duty for your father, therefore he is allowed to perform it for that reason. But generally, a specific type of Vaishnava Shraddha Homa, simplified and just basically offering things to Vishnu, to the Lord, that is performed in its stead. So one of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples insisted on performing the Vedic non-devotional Shraddha ceremony. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very upset, because it showed a lack of trust in the Vaishnava conclusions, the Siddhanta. But here, the husband and wife, Chitraketu, the mother and father, Chitraketu and Kritaduti, were lamenting. But there, Angira Muni, who had predicted that this boy would be Harshashoka, the cause of happiness and lamentation, he appeared on the scene along with Narada Muni, Narada Rishi. So he had come to do something very, very, very special, because he had decided to show mercy to King Chitraketu, but not the kind of mercy that the king actually was looking for when he first approached him and asked him, "What's wrong? You appear sad." At that point, he was looking for the mercy, what he thought was mercy, of having a son. But the great sage Angira Muni wished to give him further mercy, further blessings, eternal mercy and blessings, fix him in devotional service. So now we're going to hear the amazing methodology that Angira used, and to have him, to get some added help, Angira Muni, when he came this time, he brought Narada Muni with him. Okay. So tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll begin hearing the instructions and how Angira Muni dealt with the situation. Thank you. Any questions or comments? It's heavy, really heavy. Deep silence here. Okay. continue tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.